We're here to talk about Jane Austen, Game Theorist, a new book written by Michael Che, a political science professor at UCLA.
Well, thank you.
How did you get interested in Jane Austen?
I saw the movie Clueless. That's the one with Alicia Silverstone with my kids a while ago. And by the way, they filmed part of it near our house, just the street nearby. And Clueless was based on Austen's book Emma. And when I read Emma, I was surprised to see how much game theoretic reasoning was there. And I then read the other novels and began to see how Austen developed a theory of strategic thinking, how people take actions anticipating the actions of others.
And so when you say strategic thinking, exactly what do you mean?
Well, for example, at the very beginning of Pride and Prejudice, Miss Bennet sends her daughter Jane off to Netherfield on horseback because she anticipates that because of the rain, Mr. Bingley and Caroline will ask Jane to stay all night, and thus increasing Jane's acquaintance with Mr. Bingley. Miss Bennet, therefore, she takes an action, i.e. having Jane go on horseback, anticipating the action of the Bingleys, that is, that they will ask Jane to stay. So strategic thinking is the essence of manipulation. So Miss Bennet's thinking about she makes an action in anticipation of what the Bingleys will do. And indeed, Elizabeth Bennet calls this plan, her mother's action, a good scheme.
A scheme. So the Austen's novels then are full of manipulation and scheming, aren't they?
Yeah, in fact, there are over 50 strategic manipulations specifically called schemes in her novels. Austen is obsessed with what she calls penetration or foresight, that is predicting what other people will do in reaction to others. And that's what we call strategic thinking.
And so what does that have to do with game theory? Or maybe we need to back up. What is game theory exactly?
Well, game theory is the academic specialty which analyzes strategic thinking, and one of its founding figures is the mathematician John Nash, who is portrayed in the movie A Beautiful Mind. It's often quite mathematical, and to some degree it came out of the context of the US-Soviet Cold War, but now it is used quite widely in economics and political science and other social sciences, and to understand all sorts of situations in which people, like corporations, countries, voters, insurgents, and so forth, how they act strategically.
So you're saying that Jane Austen and game theory both analyze strategic thinking.
Yeah, but Austen did so a century and a half earlier. I mean, Jane Austen was not mathematical, but she was a game theorist. A game theorist who had strategic insights that still go well beyond modern social science, I think.
So hold on. Just because Austen wrote about how people manipulate each other doesn't mean that she was some sort of a scientist or a theoretician, does it?
Well, I mean, you're right in that strategic thinking is a part of everyday life, and everyone does it. All the time we take actions in anticipation of the actions of others. Like, I might hide the chocolates in my house anticipating that my spouse will eat them all otherwise. But Austen takes certain specific theoretical stands that go beyond that. They're so similar to those of game theory that it cannot be just a coincidence. So, for example, for Austen, choice is very important. The most important choice, of course, is a woman's choice of whom or whether to marry. And Austen's heroines staunchly defend this choice against all presumption otherwise. Let's take another example. Elizabeth Bennet says that Mr. Darcy enjoys his so-called power of choice. In Austen's novels, when a person's choice is encumbered or pressured by others, for example, when Emma persuades Harriet Smith to not accept the proposal of Robert Martin, or when Lady Russell persuades Anne Elliot not to accept Captain Wentworth's proposal in Persuasion, it's never a good thing. So encumbered choices for Austen are never a good thing. Austen really prizes the power of choice.
And so this concept or power of choice, important to Jane Austen and also important in game theory?
Yes. I mean, explaining people's behavior in terms of their choices is the foundation of game theory and also economic theory generally.
Okay. So why should the Austen fan, who already loves the novels just as they are, game theory or not, care about this strategic perspective? What does the Austen fan learn from your book?
Well, I mean, first of all, many people, not just me, have noticed that Austen includes many puzzles, what seem to be puzzles, that invite the reader to exercise her strategic thinking. So, for example, does Miss Gardiner intentionally bring Elizabeth Bennet to Pemberley with the hope of running into Mr. Darcy? Similarly, does Miss Croft, in Persuasion, knowing that her brother, Captain Wentworth, had earlier proposed to Anne Elliot, does Miss Croft move into Kellynch Hall with her husband, that's Anne's former home, with the explicit intention of bringing her brother into Anne's vicinity? So these are kind of like puzzles, and it makes you think about what are people's motivations, how are they thinking about the actions of other people. And so by posing these puzzles, Austen is trying to teach us to always think strategically.
And yeah. Does this lead us to see the characters differently, do
you
think?
Well, yeah, I think so. I mean, it helps us see the characters differently. Like, my favorite is Fanny Price. So she seems to be a very shy and self-effacing person, but if you look at her in the game theoretically, and look if you look at her in terms of the choices she makes and what she gets out of them, she's actually the most hardcore of all Austin's heroines. I mean, out of all Austin's heroines, only Fanny makes a decision that is refusing Henry Carpet's proposal. Only she does so in the face of the complete opposition of everyone else. So she's the only person who basically speaks up for herself against complete opposition. And Fanny, again, wins big time. She actually wins. I mean, she gets Edmund Bertram, and at the great expense, however, even the ruin of the Bertram family and the Crawfords. So because Henry Crawford, who had proposed to her, she refuses Henry Crawford. So Henry Crawford, because hence unsecured by Fanny, has an affair with the married Maria Bertram, which is a scandal. So Austin's point is that even someone as dependent as Fanny, who seems very shy and self-effacing, if she makes the right choices, she can act strategically and win. And by making Fanny seem so quiet and shy, Austin sort of challenges us to look beyond just appearances and look at people's choices and what they get out of it. And you know, these are the things that are really important.
And so when you say that Austin, 200 years ago, had insights that go beyond modern social science, exactly what do you mean?
Well, I mean, for example, Austin extensively analyzed what I call cluelessness. I mean, what I mean by that is the absence of strategic thinking. By the way, I got this term from the movie Clueless. Anyway, so for example, Lady Catherine de Bourgh makes a surprise visit to Elizabeth Bennet to make her promise not to marry Mr. Darcy, right? So she goes there and says, don't marry Mr. Darcy. Promise that you will not marry Mr. Darcy. So, of course, Elizabeth refuses. So Lady Catherine is Mr. Darcy's aunt and wants him, Mr. Darcy, to marry her own daughter. So Lady Catherine tries to get Elizabeth to back off. So Elizabeth refuses. Lady Catherine's furious. So then Lady Catherine goes back to Mr. Darcy and says, you know, Elizabeth, she's just an insolent girl. She's really poorly bred. You know, she refused to obey my direct command. And she tells this to Mr. Darcy. So Mr. Darcy, now who's previously rejected by Elizabeth, now gains hope because he knows that if Elizabeth still hated him, she would have, you know, readily agreed with Lady Catherine. So Mr. Darcy therefore proposes again, and of course, all happiness results. So now, ladies, this action with Lady Catherine is crucial to the plot, and actually that's crucial to bringing Mr. Darcy and Elizabeth together again. And indeed, afterward, Mr. Darcy expresses gratitude for Lady Catherine's providing so-called critical intelligence. So Elizabeth was quite skilled strategically, right? So, and it's not said so outright in the book, but she intentionally decided to try to send a message to Mr. Darcy through Lady Catherine.
Because she couldn't send it directly.
Yeah, exactly right. Thanks. And what's interesting about this is, and this is the analysis which is new for Austin, I think, new by Austin, is how clueless Lady Catherine was. So what made her so kind of clueless? In other words, she knew that Mr. Darcy liked Elizabeth well enough to make their marriage a possibility. So why did she tell Mr. Darcy that Elizabeth refused or promised not to marry him, right? She should have known that telling Mr. Darcy this would encourage him. So why did Lady Catherine's action backfire so completely? It's because she was clueless. She did not think that Elizabeth was smart enough to act strategically. Okay, she did not even consider the possibility that Elizabeth was manipulating her.
Got it.
Yeah, so, I mean, Lady Catherine's cluelessness is sort of related to her higher status. I mean, so Austin's analysis of cluelessness relates it to higher social status. That is, higher status people have difficulty understanding the lower status people as strategic actors. And this insight applies just as well today to many situations. For example, I think like when the U.S. military went to Iraq, not thinking that it's necessary to understand Iraqis as strategic actors, and thereby gets easily manipulated.
Cluelessness. It's important to remember. So do we now have a better appreciation of Jane Austen?
I think so. I mean, as many have said, Austen was one of the keenest observers of human behavior ever. But her insights about human behavior were not just elegant, but they were systematic. I mean, they formed a theory. They were broad and far-reaching enough to be called, you know, a theoretical perspective. And this theory can help us understand many, many things. For example, U.S. foreign policy blunders. And this theory is now what economists, political scientists, social scientists now call game theory.
Thank you, Michael.
Oh, thank you so much. It's been a pleasure.